This is Temple and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Yes, welcome into Temple and Heilprin, live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. Jesse, how's it going?
Going good, Zach.
Yeah, you doing all right?
There is a big game this week.
There is a big game. It is Wisconsin. It is Ohio State. The Buckeyes in Madison for the first time since 2016. It is a night game, 6:30 kickoff. Going to be on NBC. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to that. A lot of day to get prepared for what a lot of people are hoping is a raucous night, I assume.
I think people are going to be fairly well lubricated, to put it lightly, by the time 6:30 arrives.
Well, I feel like every Ohio State game ends up being a night game. It wasn't in 2012, but it was in 2010, and it was in 2008, and it was in 2003, and those were all very, very good crowds, and certainly 2016 was as well. That game went all the way to overtime, so we'll see. We're going to get into that game here in a little bit. Again, as I said, we're at Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. It's a great place to come and watch the game. They have some specials during the game, and also they're going to be starting trivia out here coming up on Monday at 7 o'clock. So I always loved trivia growing up. I come here every Thursday, obviously, for the show. I may have to stop out on Mondays now for trivia. Were you a trivia guy growing up?
No, I like the board games.
Okay.
Trivial Pursuit.
Okay. No, I get that. That makes sense.
So I guess that makes me someone who liked the trivia games.
So, like, during COVID, me and my wife, like, when you couldn't go anywhere, got into, like, PlayStation Trivial Pursuit. It's actually pretty good. It's pretty good. It's we won't get into it, but it was pretty good. So, yeah, trivia here at Monk's in Sun Prairie. All right, so for the first time since August, we had an opportunity to chat with assistant coaches. Well, Wisconsin's offensive and defensive coordinators, Phil Longo, Mike Tressel. They spoke with reporters on Wednesday. It was the first time since the middle of August that we had a chance to speak with them. And obviously, there was a lot of questions to ask. And I think the biggest question, obviously, for Phil Longo was, what has been his impression of how this has gone for him in trying to install the air raid offense, which a lot of people thought was going to hit the ground running and go. And that has obviously not necessarily been the case. I wanted to get your biggest takeaway from him and what he had to say over what, about 13 minutes, 14 minutes that he spent with us on Wednesday.
My biggest takeaway is him being willing to acknowledge that this is going to require some patience, and he said that patience is one of his worst traits, but he's learned to grow more patient after having four kids. They've kind of forced him into that. But I think it's really the first time we've heard anyone associated with the program since the season started talk about the fact that they're not anywhere close to where they want to be. And he didn't say, we're nowhere near where I think we should be. But that's the sense that I got, because expectations were ridiculously high, and certainly Phil wasn't the one who established those expectations. But I think it's worth noting that he didn't exactly squelch those expectations, because when we talked to him for the first time in January and he was asked a question about how quickly the players could learn this system, what he talked about was when he transitioned to Sam Houston, which was an FCS school, back in 2014, they were running the triple option under a previous coaching staff under Willie Fritz, and right away they implemented this air raid offense and made the national semifinals. And while I don't think anybody thought Wisconsin would be in the national semifinals right away, the expectations were super high, and we're seeing right now that it's taking a lot longer than people wanted.
Well, look at the stats, right? I think the stats are important to point out, and again, we're only seven games into a season, so there's still five left here in the regular season, but you put the stats of what this offense was last year against the offense this year, and it's not better points-wise, it's not better, or maybe it's right in the thing. Yards-wise, it's about 30 more yards per game. They're not throwing the ball as efficiently as they did last year. Now they're throwing it a lot more than last year. But all the things that were expected to pick up, yards, points, passing, it has not happened.
I went back and looked at the record books to figure out where does this season rank in terms of scoring offense, total yards, because we go back just 2 months, and what was the conversation like? Well, can this be one of the best offensive teams Wisconsin has ever had? I think you and I both agreed. We didn't think they would get to the level of the 2010-2011 teams, because 41-plus points per game is ridiculous. But there was a significant gap there under those two teams. No other team in school history has averaged 35-plus points per game, and I thought at the time that maybe they could slide in there just because of the personnel, the new system, and right now Wisconsin's scoring average is 26.9 points per game. That ranks as the 25th best single-season mark in program history, and it's 6th in the Big Ten, it's 76th nationally, and in terms of total offense, 396.9 yards, that ranks 16th in program history, and that's 5th in the Big Ten and 64th nationally. So all those numbers mean they're just nowhere close.
So where do we put, where does Phil Longo put some of that, some of the blame for that?
Well, I think it's worthwhile to point out that he put some of that blame on himself, because he talked about that he likes where the offense is headed. They need to have better execution. But he said, I challenge myself to do a better job every day. Having said that, there are a few things that he pointed out. One, that he came back to on numerous occasions, understandably so. Hey, Wisconsin lost its starting quarterback and who he considered to be its most explosive player offensively. That would be Tanner Mordecai and Chez Malusi. Now, we saw what happened when both of those guys were healthy. The Badgers weren't exactly blowing teams out. It's reasonable to believe they'd be better at this stage.
It is, especially considering what we saw the last time we saw Chez Malusi, in that it felt like maybe the offense was finding its feet a little bit against Purdue, scoring on their first three drives of the game. So I'll give him a little bit there. Yeah. I'll give him a little bit there.
Yeah, so he came back to that on a couple different questions, and that is true.
Yes.
But you got to play the hand that you're dealt.
Right.
And you asked the question that I think a lot of people have been curious about with the shotgun snaps from Tanner Bordellini. And when we had Tanner on the show, he said no one had said anything to him about it. He was just going to keep doing what he was doing. And Phil Longo said that it was an issue earlier in the season, which is the first time we've heard anybody acknowledge it. And he said it's being addressed by our staff. It's being addressed by me. It's being addressed by our centers. He also said it's been much better the last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly was better against Illinois, for sure.
Yeah. So that's one. And then also he was asked about the wide receivers and whether they were gaining separation. And I thought it was interesting because he began by saying things were a work in progress, but they were trending in the right direction. And then he stopped and totally changed gears and said, like, let me interject this. And he went into a discussion about building something like this, building for consistent success over the long haul. And he said, and that takes some time. So I think that's him acknowledging that all the pieces to this puzzle have not quite come together. And he even said in one of the things he was talking about, I think he was asked about Will Pauling as a slot receiver and comparing it to Josh Downs at North Carolina. But he said, in the past, as you will see here at some point, you'll have an explosive wide receiver that you can focus on. And to me, when I went back and listened to everything that he said, that one kind of caught my attention. But he's also not wrong. Chimray Dike right now is the only wide receiver in the rotation averaging more than 13 yards per catch. And last year at North Carolina, Longo had three wide receivers average 13-plus yards and two tight ends. So there haven't been a ton of explosive big plays that we thought there would be.
Who was the one explosive player that was in that room at the beginning of the year?
What, Keontez Lewis? Well, and he ended up as the sixth wide receiver and decided
to some of those. But also, he brought in C.J. Williams.
Yes.
He brought in Bryson Green.
Yep.
You know, it's not like he had nothing to do with that. So, maybe that is your more possession side, and you're expecting more explosive plays out of Chimray Dike or out of Quincy Burroughs, who essentially, you know, I guess would be the other guy on that side, though they've used, obviously, C.J. Williams and Bryson Green at times on that side. Maybe at some point they will have an explosive receiver. If you go and get one in the transfer portal, right? That's on you. That's not on. I mean, this is what you knew going in, so it's not like it was unexpected.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this in the end has to fall on the offensive coordinator, and because he's calling the plays and he has a lot to do with the personnel they're bringing in. There was certainly an understandable reason for excitement during the offseason. It just hasn't quite materialized the way that people thought, but I think the talent is still there. I don't know what the next step is in terms of how do you get to that level. Is it simply you need an upgrade in personnel? Is it you had kind of the old guard here? Think about all the people on offense, particularly on the offensive line, who were used to something different. And It hasn't been an easy situation for them. This is their third offensive coordinator in 3 years, third O-line coach in 3 years, third running back coach. I think all of that stuff plays a part in this as well.
It all matters.
Yeah.
It all matters. And yet, look, they are who they are right now. And how do you have there been signs of progress in your mind or statistically?
Offensively, I think the Illinois game was really vital for this team, and it showed a lot in the fourth quarter. I don't want to say that that is a statement moment that will determine how this team's going to play the rest of the season, because Illinois is not a particularly good team. On the other hand, you get down two touchdowns on the road, even against a team that's not great, you could fold up shop, and they came back. I was so impressed with the poise that Braden Locke demonstrated. Braylon Allen certainly did his thing. The wide receivers, as you addressed earlier in the week, they made some critical plays. And so I think those are all encouraging signs. Now, it's not probably going to be enough to beat Ohio State, but it's a step in the right direction.
We'll talk about that in the next segment, or actually probably the third segment as we preview the game. Wanted to ask you about one more thing that he was asked about, and that was the sign stealing. It's the obviously the huge thing that's going on with Michigan and them being investigated. There were investigators on campus interviewing low-level, this according to The Athletic, low-level personnel within the Michigan football program. It doesn't look good, and I know a lot of people have been asking coaches all around about sign stealing. Phil Longo was asked about it and how he deals with it, because he is the one that is, you know, signaling these plays in every single time. He does it without a he doesn't have like a card or anything like that that he's, you know, holding over his mouth or anything like that. I know that's more than NFL thing, because you can do it right into their headsets. But how are they trying to combat that?
Well, he said previously the reason it comes from him is so everything will fall on him. There's no extra line of communication where something could fall through the cracks, because we've seen other teams come in and they've got those big cardboards cutouts or whatever of like four different things that it looks like a game or something.
Well, I mean, it is a game.
like a board game or something. But what he said was he's not concerned at all about teams looking at his signals and stealing. He said there's a defense mechanism in there to manage that stuff, and we've never had a problem with it before, so we're not worried about it now. He also said that they discuss it any week they feel like an issue could come up. He didn't go into greater detail, and he's certainly not obligated to, in terms of what that defense mechanism is. I think of it like a pitcher and catcher in baseball. If you've got a runner on second base, what do? You vary up the signals, because you know the guy standing on second base is going to try to see what's going on and relay it. That's why you go through that, and you evaluate your signals and change them.
Like, and maybe this is maybe down the road here, going to the headset, going to the mic in the guy's head. And I know there could be a little gamesmanship when you're on the road. Like, all of a sudden it goes out. I mean, there have been accusations of that in the NFL. Like going, like sometimes it would always go out in New England. When you're like late in the game and you're trying to relay a play to your quarterback, and all of a sudden you don't have it in your headset. So there probably has to be some safeguards put in place, but I feel like that is something that at some point needs to happen, because it would take away a lot of this BS that goes around and the sign stealing. Again, sign stealing, not illegal. As long as you do it in a game and don't send people out to videotape it and then break down those signals and then have a sheet on your sideline with all those signals on it, and when they do it, you make the change. I don't know. We'll see how that all plays out for Michigan, but they are off this week, so they won't have to worry about playing a game. And a lot of people think they should be just like anything they do this year is now covered, like as in not covered, but like is all suspect, and everything they do this year is suspect. And I don't know if we're at that point yet, but either way, Wisconsin says they have a mechanism in place to deal with that if a signal is getting stolen. Defense mechanism within it, says Phil Longo. All right, coming back on the other side, we're going to play a little reaction or no. We are live at Mux Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. We have some basketball going on here in just a little bit. The Bucks going to be opening up the scene, open up the season with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo on the field or on the court together for the first time in an official game. That game coming up here at 6:30. Packers and Vikings coming up at noon. You can watch the game here as well. And Ohio State and Wisconsin, 6:30. I bet you that'll be fun here on NBC if you can't get down to the game. Again, you are listening to Temple and Heilprin.
This is Temple and Heilprin, live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Yes, welcome back into Temple and Heilprin, live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. We are here every Thursday from 6 to 7. Getting into a little Ohio State and Wisconsin talk here as the Badgers get ready to host the Buckeyes on Saturday night. A little overreaction or no on this one, Jesse. Last 2 weeks, Braylon Allen's been really, really good and has run the ball really, really hard. So I want you to tell me whether this is an overreaction or not. I've never seen Braylon Allen run harder than the last 2 weeks. Is that an overreaction or no?
I'm inclined to say it's not an overreaction, just because when Luke Fickell is talking about it, I think that says a lot. And certainly Wisconsin lost that game against Iowa, but Braylon was doing his best to keep him in it. And I said on the camp earlier this week that Braylon ran his butt off against Illinois, just was rolling through people in the second half. And so I want to say yes, but you go back and look at some of the games that he had, especially as a freshman down the stretch when Ches Malusi was also out. There was a two-game stretch against Northwestern and Nebraska where he carried 47 times total, and he went for 173 against Northwestern, 228 against Nebraska, and had six rushing touchdowns. So that's a pretty darn good two-game stretch as well.
It is. I just look at what he has been asked to do. Right? I mean, the last 2 weeks, what he's been asked to do, and really, really what he's been asked to do since Ches Malusi has gone out. And Phil Longo kind of talked about it. Yes, they've used Jackson Aker a little bit, but he's not getting nearly the same number of snaps and carries that Ches Malusi was getting when he was being asked, or, you know, when he was that one punch, right?
Yeah.
Braylon Allen's being asked to do a lot, and he has shown up these last 2 weeks, and he's running hard, and he's not dancing, and I know that's been like a huge thing that people have knocked him with. Like he's a dancer. He's dancing too much. We like when Jackson Aker hits the hole and he just goes. Well, there's been no dancing from Braylon Allen, especially late in games the last 2 weeks. I mean, you look at the second half of the Iowa game and certainly the final quarter against Illinois, that third and, what was it, the third and 10 play there, he went for 11.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hole, but he just shot through it. And there was a guy, I mean, there wasn't that big of a hole. He shot through it because he is 240 pounds, and guys are not going to tackle him just by grabbing onto his shoulder. So, yeah, that was big time from him. And I don't think it's an overreaction. He's had some really big games, certainly throughout his career, especially as a freshman. You know, I think about the Northwestern game, just him running through multiple guys in the Nebraska game was right around that same time. So there have been games like that, but this, in the last 2 years, I think is the best he's looked.
Even though there have been games that he's rushed for more yards, I think this single game may be the most impressive for this reason. He played 72 snaps in the game,
yeah,
which is the most he's ever played. And to your point about what he's being asked to do, obviously he didn't run the ball all those plays, but he did tie his career high with 29 carries. So to be asked to be out there when you've had a history of injuries, when you've battled injuries already this season in a game where it is a physical fight, it said a lot about Braylon and his toughness.
Says a ton about him. And again, it's never really been about the midseason. It's kind of been towards the end of season where he's kind of gotten dinged up. And it's been the case, you know, when he doesn't have Ches Malusi, you're counting on a lot more. But they're going to have to keep on riding him because they don't really have anybody else they can turn to for an extended number of carries each game. And just not even carries, but snaps each game. So another one here, Ohio State is the best team in the Big Ten. Is that an overreaction or no?
It's so tough to answer because Michigan and Ohio State are neck and neck. Now, Michigan has won the Big Ten the last 2 years, gone to the college football playoffs.
An asterisk.
It's hard for me to say that it wouldn't be Michigan, but I feel like Ohio State has the most talent. Michigan's had some outstanding individual performances. Blake Corum has 13 rushing touchdowns already. Roman Wilson has 10 receptions for touchdowns already. But just look at Ohio State when everybody is healthy. I don't know how you deal with defensively, how you deal with stopping Ohio State when you have Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka, and Cade Stover all out there, and Egbuka is expected to play. Wow. It's just a lot of talent. And I haven't even mentioned Travion Henderson, who's supposed to come back and is another former five-star player out of high school.
I mean, you go back and look at what Travion Henderson did in the games that he played this year. I mean, he's averaging over 6 yards a carry. He had a fantastic player. Wisconsin saw him last year. It didn't go well for Wisconsin. Not a whole lot went well for Wisconsin last year at Ohio State. That's just what it is. Obviously, Braylon had a big game. A lot of it on that one long carry that he had for the touchdown. But that is it's the most talented team, I think. Mm-hmm. And I know Michigan may end up with the most players ever drafted in a single draft this year. So when I say Ohio State's the more talented team, people are like, yeah. Recruiting-wise, they've recruited better than Michigan.
Yeah.
And that talent is still there. And so it's tough. I think the fact that they have the two best wins of probably any CFP contender currently with Notre Dame and Penn State, and people can talk about all they want about Notre Dame not being that good or Penn State, you know, being good against everybody except Ohio State and Michigan, and that's fine. But I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten, and I think there are people that have kind of undersold what they've been able to do this year, and they've done it despite all the injuries to several big-time players. I mean, if Wisconsin lost a guy like Emeka Egbuka for an extended period of time, they'd be in trouble.
Well, the problem is, if Wisconsin had an Emeka Egbuka, there would only be one guy like him on the roster.
That's what I'm saying. That's the difference. Like, you lose a guy like that, yeah, it hurts Ohio State a little bit, but it doesn't end their offense. And Travion Henderson will be like losing Braylon Allen. If you lost Braylon Allen, gosh, you'd be in trouble. Let's be fair, Ohio State's running attack has not been overly good this year, so maybe they have missed him extensively. Denzel Burke, their best corner, he's expected to play as well. And so that'd be like taking Ricardo Hallman off the field, and all of a sudden, and again, I think, obviously, Denzel Burke's better than Ricardo Hallman, and Emeka Egbuka is better than any wide receiver Wisconsin has. And Travion Henderson may be better than Braylon. It's probably a little bit close, but take any of those guys off the field for Wisconsin, and it's like, oh, my God, how are you going to win a game here? For Ohio State, they've just kept on winning even without some of those guys on the field on a consistent basis throughout. So it's been impressive, and they're doing it with a first-year quarterback in Colin McCord, who obviously was another very highly recruited kid. But I'm watching the TVs here, and they're talking about the Heisman contenders, and it's Kyle McCord's up there, even though he's probably not going to win it. And then you got Marvin Harrison Jr., who, quite frankly, in my mind, is the best skill player in this country right now. So all I'm trying to say is I think Ohio State has the two best wins. They had the best talent overall team-wide. And that is why I would say they're the best team.
Well, I mentioned this on the camp, but if you looked at the defensive and offensive starters for Ohio State against Penn State, 19 of the 22 starters were 4 or 5-star prospects out of high school. And that didn't even include Egbuka and Henderson, who were 5-star players, and Burke, who was a 4-star player.
Yeah.
So that's how it is at Ohio State.
Overreaction or no? Iowa is still the favorite to win the Big Ten West.
Oh, my goodness. This might be the hardest question you've ever asked me. I think they are a slight favorite. I can't give them any more than that because their offense is so terrible.
Yeah.
But I just think about who does everybody else have to play? Wisconsin's got to play Ohio State. Minnesota's got to play Ohio State. Iowa, I mean, I could have said this last week too. Well, look at who they have to play, and they went and lost 12-10 to Minnesota.
Right.
Rutgers is a good team.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's other West Division teams, but the way Iowa's offense is, it's a crapshoot in a lot of these matchups.
Yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction to say it, but it's not by much.
No, not at all. It's just a matter of they've got the best win. I mean, they've beaten Wisconsin, and so that puts them in a position where if they have the same record, Iowa has the tiebreaker.
Yeah. Overreaction or no, a win Saturday would be the biggest home win since the last time they beat Ohio State.
I don't even need to look up any of the home games for the last 13 years. Yes, this is – I mean – a win on Saturday, to me, will go down in history alongside any other greatest win in program history because of how good it is this year. That's just how it is.
Well, and because not many people are would expect it either. I mean, no one's expecting it. Like, at least in 2016, I know they were like, what, was it 10.5?
Yes.
10.5? There was some expectation that Wisconsin could at least compete with them strictly because of their defense. Their defense was really good that year. And then they jumped out to the lead and then weren't able to hold on and went to overtime and lost that one. But 2010, there was a feeling you could win that game.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that day like it was yesterday, and you could feel it. This has no feel of that whatsoever. 2003, they come in here in like a 19-game winning streak, and yet Wisconsin was only 2.5-point underdogs in that game. And I remember that entire week, just leading up to it, everyone was like, yep, this we can do it. We can do it. We can do it. We can do it. I don't feel that. And maybe it's a little bit different because I'm not around campus. I'm not a fan. And maybe, but every feel I get from everybody that's talked about it does not feel like that.
I think that's accurate, and I think there's a couple of reasons. The gap continues to get wider and wider. Like, Ohio State keeps getting the 4- and 5-star players, and this is also on the heels of what we saw last year. Ohio State just obliterated Wisconsin and embarrassed the Badgers, and they haven't beaten the Buckeyes since 2010. I know they've been close, and they've played Ohio State close at Camp Randall Stadium, but I think that has a lot to do with it. There's just... You see how good Ohio State is, and yes, as always, it will take Wisconsin's best performance, but they're 14.5-point underdogs, and there hasn't been a bigger underdog for Wisconsin at home in 30-plus years.
I think it's also worth noting that the last few years, Ohio State's had a first-round quarterback, and I think Colin McCourt could end up being that mm-hmm. at some point. He's not right now. He is not a C.J. Stroud. He's not a Justin Fields at this moment. It's not saying that he won't come out and tear it up on Saturday. Very well could. He probably will. But the other games Wisconsin played against Ohio State that they won and kept close to Camp Randall, I don't think the quarterback was necessarily the greatest player on the field. Like, Terrell Pryor's not a great quarterback.
Yeah.
And
Braxton Miller?
Or Braxton, that was 2012.
Yeah.
2012.
Yeah.
Not a great quarterback. It's in 2003, it was the same way. It was not a great quarterback.
Here's what I think the other part is, though. We've spent all this time talking about the offense for Ohio State.
I know.
Their defense is even better.
Yeah.
I mean, they're top five in all major categories. They've got four dudes up front who are going to be in the NFL. It's like you look across the board and you say, well, where's the advantage for Wisconsin?
Right. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. I got one more for you. I threw it in here because I went to basketball today. I didn't put it on the rundown that I sent you because I thought about it. I was sitting here. Wisconsin obviously had a ton of transfers in football make an impact. We've seen that. They're going to have one big one in basketball make an impact. His name is A.J. Storr, the kid that transferred here from St. John's. Got to see basketball today. He broke through it wasn't a run out, but it was like he got the ball in transition, went through two guys and dunked it. And I was like, whew, it's been a while. I mean, Johnny Davis, that's the type of athleticism he's got. So my question to you is, A.J. Storr will be the biggest impact transfer between football and basketball. He'll make a bigger impact than anybody else in football this year. Is that an overreaction or no?
That's a great question, and I don't think it's an overreaction. Just look at the guys, the transfers in football. And originally, I would have said Tanner Mordecai, and now he's got a broken right hand. And
right.
Will Pauling is probably, and Nathaniel Vakos have been the most effective. But Storr's going to get a ton of minutes. He's going to be a major player, so I actually think he will be the most impactful transfer.
I could be there. It's what I was thinking about on the way over here. It's like he's got a chance. Again, he can play him a bunch of different spots, and you could play him in a big lineup. You could play him in a small lineup. Like he's got some versatility, and Greg Gard maybe didn't have that guy last year. He's got him this year. If he stays healthy, I think he probably does make a bigger impact than anybody else. But we'll see. We'll see. All right, come back on the other side. Going to talk a little bit more about Wisconsin and Ohio State. We'll get into the defense and what Wisconsin has to do to get a win on Saturday night.
This is Temple and Heilprin, live from Mox Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Yes, welcome back into Temple and Heilprin. We're at Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. Great place to come for whatever sport you're trying to watch. We've got plenty of sports to watch right now. Got a little college basketball, got a little NBA as the Bucks get their season underway in Milwaukee against Philadelphia. We got NHL, the Badgers hockey team going to be taking on number one Minnesota later tonight as well. So lots to watch here at Monk's in Sun Prairie. All right, let's get into what has to happen for Wisconsin on Saturday as they take on Ohio State, looking to beat them for the first time since 2010. And, you know, moved to 4-1 in Big Ten play. And if they win this one, then they are a favorite, I think, to win the West. Would you say that?
Very much so.
Okay. All right. All right. So, for you, how does Wisconsin win?
They have to win the turnover battle, first of all. Maybe give themselves a short field. And I think they've got to hit a big play or two against Ohio State. This defense of Ohio State is so talented. It's tough for me to see Wisconsin putting together one of those 12-play drives where they're getting four first downs. They're more inclined to have three and outs than they are to have that. So to me, it's some of those cliches you talk about in a football game, but they are absolutely true for this one. They cannot give the ball away to Ohio State because the Buckeyes will make them pay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Braden Locke, a little loose when out of the pocket with the ball, that is something that can't happen. You have to win the turnover battle. And could you have a big play in special teams like you did 13 years ago? Could that play a role? The 2009 game was affected significantly. This one, that one down in Columbus, significantly affected by special teams. 2010 game, obviously the way it started, impacted by special teams. Ken Wisconsin, and, you know, I remember last year, special teams was irrelevant because it was a 28-0 game, but Paul Christ punting from, it was like a 4th-and-3 and punting because he wanted to back him up because he thought the defense could, you know, get a stop, and then Ohio State went just right down the field and scored. So I think special teams could play a big role, but how do you deal with JT Tuimolo, the edge player for Ohio State? I think this is Jack Nelson's biggest challenge by far, and he had a big one against Washington State, and it didn't necessarily go his way. But him and Jack Sawyer both are so talented, and I think a huge challenge for Wisconsin's offensive line and how you deal with them. Like, I think we talked last year, you know, they didn't have a guy like a Chase Young or a Joey Bosa or a Nick Bosa. He is kind of like those guys. And they're both obviously highly ranked guys, but JT he has ruined Penn State the last 2 years.
Well, Braden Locke was asked about this earlier in the week about what he needed to do, and one of the things he talked about was he had to make very quick decisions, or he has to make very quick decisions and be clean. And perhaps that goes without saying, but he certainly recognizes after watching the tape what you have to do. If he stands there in the pocket like a statue for too long, he's dead to rights. So you got to get the ball out quick, and maybe some of that has to do with, in this offense, we've seen Phil Longo likes to run some of those shorter routes. Just get the ball out. Get it into your playmaker's hands and hope that the blocking is there and hope you can spring one, because you can't take negative plays. You cannot be in a situation where you're backed up and it's 3rd-and-12 or something like that. You can say that about any opponent, but Ohio State especially, they will just eat you up.
And then it's the penalties, right? It's the stuff that we saw early against Illinois. And maybe that is another thing that we haven't really talked about, is the slow start that has plagued them in, what, every game but one? Could you make the argument that every game but one? I mean, certainly before the Purdue game, and I don't think we've necessarily seen a ton after the Purdue game in terms of getting off to fast starts. So, yeah, come out. And maybe the crowd helps in that respect. Maybe the crowd, how juiced it's going to be in there, maybe the crowd is able to help out a little bit in getting them focused up and going from the jump. But there are so many things. Like, you know how many things we've talked about that have to go right for Wisconsin?
Yep.
It's so difficult to see all those things going right. And I don't, again, I kind of agree with Braylon Allen. I wouldn't have said it if I was Braylon Allen, but I kind of agree with him. Like, you don't want to talk them up so much because they're not unbeatable.
Right.
They were seconds away from losing to Notre Dame. So that they're unbeatable, and they, unlike Michigan, have not dominated every single opponent that they've played. So it's not that they're unbeatable, but it is a huge, huge task probably bigger than anything this team has faced against a Ohio State team. Well, I guess last year was obviously a huge task that I don't think anybody thought that it was going to go Wisconsin's way. But at home, I think this might be the best Ohio State team they faced at home of all the games that have been tight in the last 20 years.
It's not only going to take the best performance that Wisconsin has had this season, it's going to take the best performance Wisconsin has had in years. I mean, that's not hyperbole. That is fact. They don't get a ton of opportunities to play Ohio State, but usually when they do, the Buckeyes are tremendously talented, and it's not unusual to see them undefeated. So you've got to take advantage of the moment, but it's just so difficult. I don't want to make it seem like it's impossible, but as I said earlier in the week, it's improbable.
This reminds me, I meant to bring this up when we were talking about it with Overreaction or No, in terms of whether it would be the biggest win, you know, since last time they beat Ohio State. Do winning Big Ten West, like, that just doesn't come to mind, like, when you're talking about home games? Because they beat Minnesota twice to win the Big Ten West at home. They beat Nebraska in Nebraska's first home, first Big Ten game. They whipped them. They won the Big Ten at the end of that year by beating Penn State pretty good. Like, those are all big wins.
Yeah, I don't want to diminish the value and importance of those wins.
Memorable wins, though.
Yes.
That's the difference. Like, this will wash away anything that's happened in the last 13 years.
Because the ones you're talking about, I mean, Minnesota wasn't undefeated and third in the country, and Minnesota didn't have the history that Ohio State did.
Right.
And that's why this is so special. That's why it's going to be the most raucous, ridiculous atmosphere we've seen all season, because people want to be a part of it, and people want to see something magical and special that, frankly, they will talk about for the rest of their lives if the Badgers can pull it off.
I mean, we're still talking about 03. We're still talking about 2010. Could talk about the 93 Ohio State game that they didn't even win. It was a tie, and still break out all those memories. 92 beating Ohio State. There's people in the eight from that watched Wisconsin football in the 80s when they beat them a couple times. Like, Wisconsin was not good at football for the most part in the 80s, yet they still were beating Ohio State on a somewhat regular basis. But this would be huge. This would be a new generation's 2010 if they're able to figure it out on Saturday night. It's also a big one, obviously, recruiting wise. And a lot of guys in town. How big of an impact do you think this weekend, a weekend like this, can have?
I think it can have a big impact for guys who may be visiting here for the first time. They don't know much about Wisconsin. We've talked about this before. People come from the South or the East Coast, and they think that it's farmland here and there's nothing. And then you get into Camp Randall, and you see that there's 80,000 people. They're screaming their heads off. It's an absolutely insane environment. And maybe you start to think a little bit more about potentially coming to Wisconsin. The challenge is those top guys get to see an environment like this everywhere they go. Yep. If they're going to Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan. But this is really important for recruiting, because this is an opportunity to showcase your program on a national stage in the biggest game you're going to play all year.
Yep. One quick question I got from Chris. He says, are you surprised Wisconsin isn't unveiling an alternate jersey for the Ohio State game?
How do we know they're not? Are they going to sneak one in?
I'd be shocked if they did.
I'm surprised, because
it's an opportunity.
One of those games to do it.
But it's also things you have to do like a year. Wasn't like a whole year in advance like that. Like, that's all like the helmet stuff is like all like a year in advance. So that maybe is why. I guess I would be shocked if there would be something special on Saturday night. I think they'll be in their normal home uniforms. But hey, you never know. You never know. All right, coming back on the other side, we're going to pick all the games. Jesse is now 10 games above 500. We'll see if he's got more of that luck stored somewhere, as we pick the games for this weekend.
This is Temple and Heilprin, live from Muck's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Yes, welcome back into Temple and Heilprin. All right, Jesse, we've got some games to pick here. Six games to pick. It's been a heck of a run for both of us. You much better than me, but you were 10 games over 500 on the season. That is impressive.
Obviously, I have a magic eight ball that tells me what the result is going to be.
I am back to 500, so I'm feeling good about that. I was hurting there for a while, but after 4 and 2 weeks for both of us, we are doing quite well. But this will not be an easy week because there's not a ton of great games to pick from. So I kind of went a lot of top 10 teams on the road, some big spreads as well. But we'll start with this one. Oregon traveling to Utah. The Ducks are 6.5-point favorites. Oregon 8th ranked in the country. Utah coming off a big win over USC last weekend.
I'm going to go Oregon on this one. I know it's a 6.5-point favorite, which feels like a lot, but I'm also just so impressed with what Bo Nix has been able to do this year. He's got 19 touchdowns, one interception, and obviously the Ducks' only loss was that 3-point loss at Washington.
I love Utah in the way that they just get physical with teams. They just punch them in the mouth, and can they react? And USC was a team that could not react. Can Oregon react on the road? I'm going to take Utah. I'm going to take Utah there at home. I don't know if they win the game. I think they're able to cover the 6.5. Purdue traveling to Nebraska. The Huskers suddenly warm. I'm not going to call them hot. Suddenly warm. They are 2.5-point favorites.
They will be hot if they beat Purdue. They'll then be on a 3-game winning streak. I think it's going to be Nebraska covering this one. We've seen Purdue. They're not a particularly great team. Obviously, you can say the same for Nebraska, but I'm going to go with the Huskers on this one.
It's going to be a close one. I think it's going to be tight. I think Purdue coming home, or Purdue going to Nebraska. Screw it. Taking Nebraska. 2.5 at home.
You wanted to pick Purdue.
I did want to go Purdue there. Georgia going on the road to Florida. They are 14.5-point favorites. The Dogs, obviously the number one team in the country. They are going down to face Graham Mertz, one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the country.
A couple weeks ago, we had to pick the Kentucky-Georgia game, and I thought Kentucky would cover it. Georgia won 51-13. I tell you I'm not going to make that mistake again, but I'm going to make that mistake again. I think Florida finds a way to cover because Graham Mertz has been playing good football. He's got 12 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. I think he's going to keep him in the game.
I completely disagree. I think he is eaten up on some bad defenses, and there are some bad defenses in SEC. Don't let people tell you otherwise. I think Georgia's going to go down there, even without Brock Bowers, going to find a way. I think the defense really, really dominates Florida, and they're able to cover that 14.5. Oklahoma, also on the road. They go to Kansas. They are 9-point favorites at Kansas. Kansas, no Jalen Daniels.
I'm going Oklahoma on this one. As much as it pains me as a KU alum from way back when, I think Oklahoma goes in there and covers.
Yeah, we'll see. Not exactly probably a great atmosphere at 11 a.m. in the morning, but we'll see how it plays out. Oklahoma at Kansas. I'm going to take Oklahoma as well. The final one here before Wisconsin and Ohio State, Washington, going on the road at Stanford. They're 26.5-point favorites. If you look at what happened last week with Washington, it went down to Arizona State and needed a miracle. Not a miracle. It needed some really big plays late in that game to win it. This spread kind of scares me, but I'll let you talk about that.
This is such a massive spread, and yet Stanford has lost to UCLA 42-7, has lost to Oregon 42-6, lost to Sacramento State. Obviously, they have their signature win of a triple overtime win against a Colorado team that's not particularly good now. I think Washington's going to cover.
Yeah, unless Washington gives up 300 yards to a wide receiver and a half, like Colorado did, I think they're going to be all right. I think that was kind of their little bit of sleepwalking after beating Oregon the week before down at Arizona State. So yeah, I'm gonna take Washington on the road at Stanford to cover that 26.5 as well. All right, Wisconsin hosting number 3 Ohio State, looking for their first win over the Buckeyes in 13 years. It is a home game. It is at night. It's at 6:30. Crowd should be pretty jazzed up. We've got a big weekend for recruiting as well. What do you got for this game?
This game could go sideways in a hurry, but Wisconsin has traditionally played Ohio State close at home. I think the last 6 matchups in Madison have been by single digits. I'm going to go Ohio State 24-10, which would mean Wisconsin covers under the wire.
It is 14.5, so it kind of gives you a little bit of leeway there.
I got some wiggle room.
The last time Wisconsin lost as a lost by double digits to Ohio State was 2000. It was, I think, a 23-7 game or something like that. They have
at home.
At home, excuse me. Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Yes, quite a few times they've lost by double digits. I believe every single time on the road by double digits. Maybe outside of that 2013 game. I feel not good about this one. I feel not great about it. I don't want to, like, be pie in the face, like, stupid, because I know what Saturday night is going to be like at Camp Randall. I feel like it's going to be one of those type of games that people remember atmosphere-wise, but I've also been at those games where it hasn't gone Wisconsin's way either. That said, I picked Wisconsin to upset Ohio State at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it on Saturday.
I didn't think you'd have the stone to do it based on what we've seen so far.
I don't have the stones at all to do it. However, I do think Wisconsin figures out a way to score 13 points. I think Ohio State scores 30, so I think Ohio State does cover.
Okay.
So it's going to be it is not a game that I think Wisconsin is out of immediately, like they were in last year's game where it was 28-0 before they even crossed midfield. But I don't feel good about it ending up being Wisconsin's game.
This is one of those opportunities where, as I said earlier in the week, Wisconsin can go into the locker room and say no one believed in us, and it will be true.
It is. But it is such an opportunity. It is such an opportunity for Wisconsin to, under Luke Fickell, to put their, this is how good that win was last week against Illinois. It's Illinois. If you were to somehow figure out a way to win this one, it'd be huge. But we'll see how it plays out. Wisconsin and Ohio State at 6:30 on Saturday night. We'll be back next week to talk all about it.